Thank you, Steve. Hi, everybody. It's Bill and Wendy, kind of, sort of. Wendy's taking a long weekend. She was being replaced today by my good friend Harry Tynowitz. Hello, Harry.
Hi. You can never replace Wendy.
Well, you can't. I mean, you can try.
I could sit in the same chair, you know.
But you're a different person.
Different person.
Totally different person. You just said something a few minutes ago that just hit me. I just realized it. Why would you say it if it wasn't true? Your daughter, Lucy, now 17 years old, will be attending the prom tomorrow.
Uh-huh.
She was just born about an hour and a half ago. How does this happen so fast?
I have no idea. I swear to God. I remember that moment where, like, you know, I used to always take, we'd go outside, Lucy and I, we'd go for, when I still lived, like, in Wrigleyville. And
yeah.
We'd go for walks down Kenmore, and she'd go up every path to the brownstone and back down every path. And it was, like, 45 minutes later, we'd be, like, three, you know, doors over. And then there was that one day where she, like, took off, started running, and I couldn't catch her.
Yeah.
You know, she's, like, running to the dog park. And I'm like, don't go that way. There's a Good Humor truck the other way. And now there she is. She's like 6 days away from being a senior.
Doesn't that drive you? I mean, you know, it's inevitable. I understand how time passes. I get that. But when it happens so
fast.
I got to watch at home. I stare at the face of it. I go, okay, 1 second. There's another second. There's another second. But with my daughters, I remember so vividly all the times that, now keep in mind, for people who don't know, I have twin daughters, so everything was doubled. So whenever I would take them somewhere on my own.
Your wife was pregnant for 18 months.
18 months, right. I remember the rigmarole, if I can borrow a word that everybody's mom likes to say, of putting them in their car seats and their baby seats and just going, oh, I wish so badly that this didn't have to be a thing, but it is a thing to secure them and fasten them and buckle them and stuff like that. And now I'd give anything to just put them in a car seat. You know, it's stupid.
And I remember, like, talking, you know, our good friend Mike Toomey. I remember talking to him. Lucy was like 3 months old. And I said, Mike, you know, at night I just go in there and I stare at her and I can't believe, like, you know, how wonderful it is that she's here and how much I love her. And he's like, well, you know, 13 years from now you'll be doing that.
Yeah.
I'm like, no, that goes away.
Yeah.
He was right. Yeah.
Yeah. But everybody, remember when you were a kid and everybody said, hey, enjoy stuff because it goes by so fast. And
right.
You go, what are you talking about? It doesn't go by so fast. Oh, they were right.
I should have listened. You know, betting through a bookie, you know.
Right. You should have waited.
Yeah. Just sixth grade would have been way different.
Now, Lucy's stance on the prom is, if I understand this right, she's not going. There's not a guy. Like in the old days,
right.
A guy would ask a girl to go to the prom and then they'd go to the prom.
Right. Like Greg Brady or someone like that.
Yeah.
Right.
But now it's different.
She's going with five of her girlfriends and they're just going to go to the prom together and hang out. It's you know, it's no statement to be made.
Right.
They're just having fun. You know, she had one serious boyfriend, 3 years at Evanston. So far she's had like one serious boyfriend.
Uh-huh.
And now she's just, like, you know, going with her friends to the prom. So they're meeting for picture, you know. It's the same fun of having a dress and you know. And my Wendy has not Wendy Snyder, but
your wife Wendy.
I almost called her my wife.
Are you married? You're not married to Wendy Snyder. Right?
I don't know.
You're not.
Is she yelling at me and calling me names? Does she blame me for everything?
Not everything.
Okay, no. So I'm not married to Wendy Snyder.
Right.
You know, she's got the thrill, the fun of looking forward to prom, and they're all gonna meet tomorrow, and they're all gonna take pictures. They're all getting, you know, corsages.
Yeah.
And they're gonna go to together and they're gonna have a blast.
Now Wendy Snyder, the one you're not married to, and I have discussed this on the show more than once, when we went, some schools said that if you don't have a date, you don't get a ticket to the prom,
which is ridiculous.
That's how it used to be. That's changed.
I don't think Nutria ever did that. That's weird.
Yeah.
You know, if you didn't have a date at Nutria, you could go. You just had to sit in a section marked loser.
They had a loser section.
I was quite comfortable. You know, it was all the KFC and Zag Nuts I could eat.
Oh,
yeah,
that's not bad.
Yeah.
Now I will go on record as saying that the prom, if you look at your lifeline of all the big events that take place during your lifeline, for most people, not for everybody, but for most people, the prom is going to be one of your bigger letdowns. Do you agree or disagree? I guess it depends on a lot of variables, I guess.
Right. I mean, like, you know, when I think back, you know, I never went to prom.
You didn't go?
Never, not at once.
Is it too late? Would you consider now? Caller 10, 312-591-7200.
That's how I met my wife. She was caller 8. Did you go to prom?
I did.
And
overrated.
Overrated. You go, how many times did you go?
I went to one prom and several turnabouts and several homecomings. But in our school, you only went to the prom if you were a senior. I know a bunch of other schools that you can go as either a junior or senior. Prom. But I also know schools that you can go if you're a freshman or, you know, if you're later in life.
I thought if you were asked by an upperclassman, you could go to the prom. The prom was for juniors and seniors, but if you were a freshman or a sophomore and you got invited by an upperclassman,
then I think you get in.
Then I think you get in.
That's how it is at a lot of schools.
For most schools, Mayor? Yeah.
But it's so expensive. Some of these kids who want to go as freshmen,
yeah.
I always told my kids no. You're not going.
Go once, right?
I mean, no, go. You can go junior or senior year, but it's so expensive that, you know, go to the other dances.
Right.
Have fun, especially if you're with a group and all that. But man, prom,
I know.
It's so pricey to go four times,
yep.
or three or four times. And then it's not as special
right.
either, I don't think.
Bill, now you really don't drink now, but
right.
were you like all liquored up at your prom in
no.
high school?
I didn't, but the girl that I went with had a different stance.
You had a string back then, man.
She had a couple of drinks prior to and during and after, and
that's how you used to like your women.
No, I it's really funny. I didn't, and she didn't. That wasn't the way she normally was, but I think she felt that because it was prom night, she needed to, and mm-hmm. I was kind of the opposite. So our conversations were interesting that night. Not that she'd remember any of them.
Where does the Catholic Church stand on prom night?
I also remember, like, we met at a my friends and I all met at a hotel prior uh-huh. to. We rented a room, and there were, I think, eight guys in our dates, and we had this. All right, so that was the night that Gilligan's Island had a reunion show, and I started watching
awesome.
It.
Yeah,
you remember it?
Filmed in Chicago.
It was not filmed in Chicago. It was not filmed in Chicago. But I started watching the Gilligan's Island reunion show, and then I didn't want to miss it, the end of it, because we didn't have, you know, DVRs back then.
And you wonder why your date was drinking.
Right. In retrospect, she was probably the smarter of the two of us. Yeah. But, I mean, if I had to do it all over again, the strange thing is I probably would do it all over again, because mm-hmm. I know it's a benchmark for your life. Going to the prom is a big deal. But it was so overrated in terms of what I thought it would be and what it ended up being. It just, I don't know. And all my friends kind of felt the same way. There were a couple of them that dated girls for a long time prior to the prom, and then once the prom was over, for various reasons, they split up. And I don't know, it just didn't pay off.
I mean, if I was thinking like the days I remember from high school, like,
yeah.
so I, you know, I remember, like, you know, for, I was in the theater department, and
yeah.
I finally got some, you know, like fun parts, good parts. So I remember, like, the individual.
You did the play prom night at your, well, didn't you? Isn't that weird?
Well, Carrie.
Oh, you did Carrie?
Yeah, and, you know, they got blasted for, you know, casting me as Carrie.
That's
but,
ridiculous
yeah,
casting.
I could do the blood thing. but I remember, like, you know, so being in the show, like the nights of getting to be on stage, you know, with the fun parts and
yeah.
Graduation, of course.
Yep.
Right. And I remember, like, getting a trier, teachers coming up to me in the morning saying, "You look a little sick. Why don't you take the day off and come back for rehearsal?"
Oh,
that's good.
That was nice of them.
Good strategy
yeah.
there.
You didn't miss much with the prom. You didn't miss much. Wait, let's take a quick break. Want to jump in? You can. We're at 312-591-7200. Love to hear from you. It's Bill and Harry Tynowitz in for Wendy Snyder on WGN. It's Bill F. It's Harry Tynowitz. Harry's filling in for Wendy, who's taking a long weekend. She'll be back on Tuesday. I know how much sports means to you. I know you breathe sports, so I'm curious what your thoughts are. Now, this is a cross-pollination of sports and politics, but please walk me through this deal with the NFL, by which players are no longer allowed to protest. You must stand during the anthem. What are your thoughts?
I think it's a horrible, horrible, horrible decision. And for so many reasons. They don't understand why players are doing it, and they look bad. I think it targets, you know, African-American players, because, you know, 70% of the league is African-American.
Yeah.
And there are many, you know, white players that, you know, took a knee, but the black players are the ones that are, you know, getting harassed. And again, they're not, first of all, I think people miss out on the concept. They're not kneeling to protest the national anthem. It's nothing against the military. There's groups and groups of military, you know, that are like pro, you know, taking a knee for this.
Yeah.
They just wanted, Colin Kaepernick wanted to start a conversation, as you know,
yep.
wanted to start a conversation about the, you know, the injustice that happens constantly with white cops and black people that are just, you know, in the case of Sterling, you know, Sterling Brown, the Milwaukee Bucks player, the video was released yesterday. He gets a parking ticket.
Right.
And he gets tased.
Right.
And their police report says that he was, like, physically, you know, intimidating, and he was, you know, like, aggressive.
And, he wasn't.
And in the video, he's not.
The only troublesome moment in there is they want to see his hands, and he says he has something in his hands, but he doesn't want to get into it. That was the one strike against him there.
But the ruling that Roger Goodell came up with, you know, that if you take a knee, you'll be fined and your team will be, you know, penalized 15 yards.
Right.
That to me, that's horrible. And the whole part of America that we love is like democracy, you know, the right to have an opinion about something.
Right. Right.
And I think they're missing the boat, and they're saying, well, if you're going to kneel, stay in the locker room.
Yeah.
Well, come on. Don't have people stay in the locker room.
You hit the nail on the head with the very first part, Harry, where the message, the original message in all this is lost. When Colin Kaepernick started this a couple of years ago, What was being protested at the time has just been all but forgotten, and that's the sad part, is because that's the most important part, or should be the most important part of the story, and it's not anymore.
It's not, and you know, now there's word that they took a survey, you know, asking people if Colin Kaepernick should be in the league. And,
right.
You know, the guy was not the best quarterback in the NFL, but there's so many quarterbacks who played in the league last year that aren't as good as Colin Kaepernick.
Right. So what do you think happened behind the scenes? I know a lot of owners looked at him as a viable option as their quarterback, but then they tried to weigh the pros and cons of having him in there. So do you think there was some sort of collusion behind the scenes? There was.
I think there was collusion, and I think all it took was one brave owner. And if you think about it, you know, in most cases, a lot of cases, it's family money.
Yeah.
But, you know, in most cases, these owners did something dynamic with their lives, which, you know, allowed them to earn enough money to buy a professional sports team.
Right.
So they were bold and dynamic in you know, developing their fortune. So all it takes is one person, you know, to make that decision. Baltimore Ravens last year, they desperately needed a quarterback, and they were going to sign Kaepernick.
Yeah.
And their owner, Steve Bisciotti, depending on how you pronounce it, they say he was concerned about losing his Ravens sponsorship deals.
Yeah.
You know, that they had so much money tied in with sponsors that if they brought Kaepernick on board, he thought they would leave the Ravens.
Right.
Not NFL sponsors, but the Ravens specifically.
Right.
And that's just, it's horrible.
Shouldn't be that way.
It's brutal.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'll be watching Saturday Night Live. I'll be fast forwarding through Saturday Night Live, you know, to get to Weekend Update. And I'll see, like, you know, the musical guest is wearing a Colin Kaepernick jersey.
Right.
And so, like,
right.
He sort of like sacrificed his career. You know, he just wanted to start the conversation.
There's some people who want to continue the conversation. They're on the line. Let's start out with Don. Hi, Don. What's up? What are your thoughts on this?
Well, I think what you're missing in all this is that being a football player, you're representing the organization. If I were to protest at my office, I would lose my job. And so they have the right to protest. They have the right to state their own opinion on their own time, but not on company time, which for them is when they're on the field.
Harry, what do you think?
I think it's because you're right. If you did it at work, you would get fired. But I don't know your boss, but I'm assuming you would. But I think that Kaepernick and these athletes are aware that they've got a huge spotlight. And so instead of Charles Barkley, I am not a role model, they're saying, let's take advantage of the spotlight. And, you know, Jimmy Kimmel just did it again last week when there was the horrible shooting at the high school in Santa Fe. He showed clips of Pence, Trump, Ted Cruz, all talking about how we got to keep the Second Amendment. We have to have the right to bear arms. And then he interspliced, his people interspliced, kids running from the school shooting with blood all over them and in terror. And Kimmel also used it to talk about, you know, health coverage when his son, his baby boy was born and had to have like a couple of heart surgeries right away. I don't think that there's anything wrong, you know, as long as they're coming to practice and they're following the rules, they're not, you know, doing anything disruptive to the team. I don't think there's anything wrong to take a knee before the game because they're aware so many people are watching, they could make an impact.
But if it was on their own time, yes, they could call their own press conference and do that. but representing the organization, it wouldn't be allowed. If Bill decided to protest while he was on air and go into some diatribe about how he dislikes a certain newspaper in Chicago, he'd lose his job and it would be shut down. That's what they're missing.
And but don't you think, Don, isn't there some way to do them simultaneously to represent the whatever company you're working for, in this case an NFL team, and also show some not only individuality, but show some opposition to an idea or a thing that bothers you? Can't you do them both simultaneously, kind of?
You could if you were working with your employer, with their cooperation, with their permission.
Well, that's the funny thing. Harry, back me up on this. Last year, there were plenty of NFL teams that were supporting this, saying, if our players want to take a knee, feel free.
Right. I mean, there were owner, you know, the owner of the Jacksonville Jaguars, Khan, went when the Jaguars played in London. He went down on the sidelines.
Yeah.
And he stood with the team. He kneeled with the team. Jerry Jones.
So you know, what changed? Did. What has changed since then?
Trump.
Is that what it is?
I think it's Trump, and I think it's you know, Roger Goodell.
Yeah.
And this should have been.
I think it's the fact that the viewership on football last year was off.
It took a huge hit.
It did.
Were not paying attention to football because they were fed up with the political garbage that was being dragged into sports.
Yeah, let me ask you a question. Is it different that he does it before the game starts? Because he's not like in the middle of it. He doesn't come to the you know, to the 25-yard line. It's 3rd and 4, and he takes a timeout and then takes a knee. He's you know, he's doing. They're all, everybody who's protesting, everybody who takes a knee does it before the game even starts.
But you're on the field. You're already representing your team
on the field. Don, we have to take a break, but thank you so much for the call. Really appreciate it. Have a good weekend.
You too. Have a good holiday.
Appreciate it. All right, let's do this. We'll take a quick break. A lot more show. Stay here. It's Bill and Harry in for Wendy on WGN. I want to ride my bicycle, bicycle, bicycle. I want to ride my bicycle. I want to ride my bicycle. Well, it happens again this Sunday. It's MB's Bike the Drive. Claire McDermott joins us right now. She's the Director of Marketing and Special Events for the Active Transportation Alliance. Claire, how are you?
Great, thank you.
All right, take us through this. What happens on Sunday? Every year I say, this is the year I got to finally do it, and I still haven't done it, and I'm kicking myself for not doing it. Tell us about this year.
Great. So this year we will shut down Lake Drive completely to car traffic, and it's just open to bikes. We typically have about 20,000 people that come out and participate, and it's just a really magical day, you know, not a car in sight. You really feel the wind off the lake, and it's so cooling and refreshing. It's just a really great day out there.
And this, Claire, this is not just for those Lance Armstrong types in the short, tight biker shorts. This is anybody that just wants to have the chance of a lifetime to ride their bike on Lakeshore Drive.
Absolutely, yes. MB Bike to Drive is open to all abilities. It's open to all ages. You can ride as little or as much of the 30-mile course as you'd like. And we definitely have all different types of cyclists out there, young, old, and everything in between.
And there's never a race, right? I mean, this is just leisure. There's no prize money to be had, right? You're just running. You're riding for fun. That's it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's just a fun day out there. And, yeah, I mean, of course, you have some people that decide they want to go a little faster, but we definitely have people that also crawl along, you know, and go as slow as they'd like. It's very comfortable pace for anyone, you know, that wants to do it.
Now, every year you guys turn down my idea of MB's Trike the Drive, where everybody would have to ride a tricycle. Why do you keep turning my idea down?
Yeah, you might see some trikes out there, but yeah, it probably won't be very many, that's for sure. Right. Although we will have a large collection of electric bikes out there this year. Bosch is one of our sponsors. They're bringing out a huge fleet of electric bikes. They can get going pretty fast. It's pretty amazing.
Oh, nice.
If Bill and I wanted to, could we tandem the drive?
Is that a doable thing?
Absolutely. We welcome tandems. Yeah, any type of bike is welcome.
Now, remind me how this works, Claire. You can start as early as, it's like 5:30, right? Is that start time or can be start time?
That's correct, yes. People can still register. I should probably add, you register at mbbikethedrive.org. You can register all the way up until the morning of the ride. And it kicks off at 5:30 a.m. People can start either at Jackson and Lakeshore Drive at our main starting location, Or you can also start at the north and south end points. So at the north at Hollywood or south at Museum of Science and Industry. We recommend starting no later than 7 a.m. to get the most time out on Lakeshore Drive.
Oh, that makes sense. Yeah, and you could, if you wanted to, you could keep looping around, right? You don't, you can't only ride it once. If you wanted to do it more than once, you could, right?
Yeah, absolutely. People definitely strive to, you know, do it more than once. We this year we added a new thing called the 30-mile challenge. So people can take advantage of that. They, you know, when they come to pick up their packet, they can pick up a 30-mile challenge bib. And then if you do the whole 30 miles, you just would use a trip tracking app on your phone. And then afterwards, you head over to the festival, you get a little prize.
Cool. Bill has always dreamed of dressing as Pee-wee Herman and getting on his shiny red bicycle. Do you have people that come in costume? Do they get, how elaborate do we get?
We do get people in costume. You know, I wouldn't say it's a huge number, but certainly we have people that, you know, come in tutus and wigs and, you know, they like to have a little bit of fun with it. We're definitely all about having fun out there. So if people want to come as Superman, you know, hey, it's more power to them.
Claire, to your knowledge, do they do this in any other city? Is there any other roadway that people always say all year long, I'd love to ride my bike on this, but there's too much traffic, but that one day a year you're allowed to? Does that happen anywhere else?
There is a ride in New York City. I don't know what road it's on, but this is actually the second largest bike ride that happens in the United States next to that ride in New York City.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're just really, we're very, very thankful, obviously, to MB Financial Bank. They're, you know, very supportive. And, Active Transportation Alliance, we work to improve conditions for biking, walking, and transit. So we really, you know, appreciate MB's commitment to making Chicagoland better, putting on this event, obviously, where people can experience Lakeshore Drive without cars. And we just want to, you know, do more work in the city to, again, make people feel comfortable out on bikes every day.
We're so fortunate because we really have one of the most beautiful stretches of roadway anywhere in the country, if not the world, in Lakeshore Drive. So to be able to take advantage of it in this unusual way once a year, we're very, very lucky.
Yeah, it's definitely a very unique sort of bucket list event for a lot of Chicagoans. So we hope that people sign up. It'll be a beautiful day out there. We hope everyone can join us.
And if I wanted to, in the middle of biking and drive, could I just pop wheelies?
No popping wheelies, Harry. I'm sorry, Claire. That's not allowed, is it?
Well, you know, hey, if you do want, I'm not going to yell at you.
All right.
Good.
That's fair.
Come out and have a great time.
Are there people who can make a game day decision? Like maybe they're not sure what their plans are for the weekend, and then at the last minute they want to show up and sign up. Is that a doable thing or not?
Yes, we do accept sign-ups on the day of the race or the ride. That's totally fine.
Very, very nice.
20,000 people. What was the first year?
I think we were only at a couple thousand the first year. This is the 17th year. So over the past few years, we've definitely been increasing. So it's really exciting.
Claire, I'm guessing you weren't there at the very beginning of this 17 years ago, were you? Were you part of it back then?
I was not.
I just wonder if it was a hard sell to try to convince the city to close down Lakeshore Drive for a day. It's proven to be a huge success, but I wonder how they stood on that first one.
In Chicago, you usually need to promise food.
Yes.
You know, we'll like bike and pizza the drive.
Yeah. You know, Chicago, the mayor's offices throughout the years have always been really supportive of this event. You know, it's such a unique opportunity for Chicagoans and definitely something the city sees a lot of value in. So we're really thankful for that.
And we're seeing, I'm sure you know this too, Claire, if you drive around town, more and more and more streets are giving in to bike lanes. It's sad that because of the cold weather that Chicago experiences throughout the year, they can only really be used for half of the year. But it's so nice to see that the city has given in and said, yeah, that's an alternative way to get around town is the bicycle. So I'm glad we've grown in that respect.
Yeah. And actually, winter cycling has been on the uptick. With the right gear, it can be very enjoyable as well.
Yep. All right. Let people know one more time, Claire, what do they need to know about this Sunday's MB Bike the Drive? How do they get involved?
Sure. Perfect. So you'll want to register at mbbikethedrive.org. Make sure that your bike is in good working condition. A lot of times this will be the first time of the year people take their bike out. So give it a quick check. Make sure you've got air in your tires and the chain's moving freely and that your brakes work. And then don't forget your helmet and, of course, a bottle of water because it will be warm that day. And come on down and join us.
And Sunday starts at 5:30 a.m. That's the earliest you can get your bicycle on Lakeshore Drive, and it runs until?
So the drive will be open for 5 hours total of car-free bike riding, and then we have a festival in Grant Park that goes from 8 a.m. to noon.
Are you getting power-hungry, Claire? Do you see, like, in a couple years, this is, like, a week-long event?
I don't know if I would make it a week long.
It's too long. That's too long.
But we don't want people getting too tired out there. But no, we're very excited to be on the 17th year of Empty Bike the Drive.
Very nice. We're thrilled to have it. It's Claire McDermott, the Director of Marketing and Special Events for the Active Transportation Alliance. But MB's Bike the Drive takes place this Sunday. Thanks so much, Claire. I hope you have a huge turnout.
Thank you so much. Have a great weekend, too.
Absolutely.
We'll see you guys out there.
All right. We'll take a quick break, and then there's more show. It's Bill and Harry in for Wendy on WGN. All right. It's Bill Leff, and it's Harry Tynowitz. Harry's filling in for Wendy Snyder, who will return on Tuesday. I hate to bring this up because I know this is kind of a sad situation, but a longtime friend of yours passed away recently, way too young. And you've been asked to speak at his service, and that's tomorrow, isn't it?
Yeah, he's so. I mean, I'm very close. I'm very lucky. I have some very, very close friends in my life that are wonderful people. But this is like my best friend since freshman year of high school, Tom Clark, mm-hmm. and just the most awesome guy. He owned the bar Four Moon Tavern up there, like. Damon and Roscoe? Tom had a liver transplant a couple years ago, didn't make it. He made it, but then he got pneumonia and he passed, and tomorrow is the memorial. So I've had like...
Why did they wait so long for the memorial?
I just wanted to give people time.
Yeah.
You know, I understand... You know, that like, so Jewish people, they just, you know, bury them, you know, like, you know, within, you know,
fast
15 minutes.
Right. It's very fast.
Right. You know, hey, I've got shows I'm DVRing tonight. You know, they wanted to give people a chance to, you know, make plans and come in. So, the service is, going to be tomorrow morning.
Yeah.
And, I asked, Tom's brother if I could speak. He said, absolutely. And so Tom's brother and I are the only two people that are speaking.
Yeah.
And Tom was, you know, just such a dynamic guy and a special guy and a wonderful guy. And, you know, his brother's also going to speak on behalf of his mom, who's, you know, older, and, you know, Tom's son, who's, you know, just 18. And,
are you dreading this tomorrow?
No, I'm dreading not doing the, you know, the greatest eulogy ever.
Yeah.
I'm thrilled that I can talk. And,
yeah.
I mean, my friend Steve Normart told me, you know, you were best friends with Tom. You need to take us in and, like, open a window to Tom that none of us knew.
Yeah.
You know, so tell all the stories. It's over 3 months. I've just been, like, trying to remember all my Tom stories so I could put them into the eulogy. In the last couple of days, I've been writing
right.
the eulogy. And if I had worked this hard on my stand-up career, Bill, I'd probably be on TV right
probably.
Now.
Probably. But you know what? I think, if you don't mind just a little, mm-hmm. I think you're looking at it the wrong way, is you're putting too much pressure on yourself to make this the best eulogy ever, when in reality, what you just said is exactly what you want to do. You want to let people know what it was like, what the inner workings of a friendship with him was like.
Of course, right. I'm not doing it to, you know, for America's Got Talent. My fear is that Tom, you know, was such a tremendously cool guy. I'm going to forget a story.
Yeah.
I'm going to be driving home afterwards, after spending 3 months trying to remember every story. I'm going to be driving home afterwards, and I think, oh, why didn't I say that? That was the best story.
Yeah, I know.
You know, and like I've been trying to think of stories for 3 months, and like I thought of two this week that, like, you know, thank God it's this Saturday and not last Saturday. I wouldn't have remembered either one of them. We told these girls, we invited, Tom and I had a crush on these best friends,
yeah.
and we invited them out to dinner, and they said, well, we want to go with you guys, and we love Chinese food.
Yeah.
And so Tom said, oh, we don't have to go to a restaurant. Harry and I took a course. We know how to make Chinese.
Which, like, of course, you did not.
Which we didn't.
Right.
Good. I'm like, what are you, an idiot? We just, you know, we have no chance with you. Not that I had a chance, but
yeah.
And we have no chance with these girls now. I go, all I can do is pick up a menu and order Chinese. He goes, well, how do you think we're going to make the dinner? So they came.
All right, so that's the kind of thing,
right, that's
that
the
you
kind
want
of
to
story.
Share.
Right, exactly.
Right. Yeah, I think you're in good shape.
Have you ever had to eulogize someone?
Yeah. At my mom's ceremony, mm-hmm. I was the one that was chosen to speak. And what you just described is so accurate, because you go, how do I sum this person up in X amount of minutes? Mm-hmm. And you really, it's almost impossible to sum up anyone's life in 5 or 10 or 15 minutes. So you just have to kind of find the things that you hope are most representative, right? And it's impossible. But I know you'll do fine. is the opportunity there? I know you said that his brother will speak and you will speak. Are you leaving it open afterwards to if somebody does want to come up and talk, they can? Or is that not an option?
No, the family doesn't want to do that. I've been to several that have done that, and the family just wants to, have it done this way. And, yeah. You know, it's their wishes. There'll be an actual... This is his memorial service. He's going to be laid to rest in Vermont, where his grandparents live, and lived, and there's a family plot up there. But this is for everybody in Chicago that knew Tom Clark. And
it's very sad. He's way too young.
He produced a lot of plays in Chicago, stage combat plays, and just a really, really cool guy. And it's 11 a.m. tomorrow at the Chicago Theological Society in Hyde Park.
I am finding that the ceremonies now, not to take away from the fact that it's his brother and it's you speaking, because that for various reasons, it's whatever the family wants. But the last few I've been to where they kind of leave it open, where somebody says something and they say, if anyone wants to come up. And the first few minutes, everyone's kind of tentative. You don't see anybody doing it. But after you get three or four or five, people go, oh, okay, I have a moment I want to share.
So I was a big fan of Tim Weigel's.
Yeah.
And Tim was very supportive of me, and I'm very good friends with Jennifer.
Yeah.
Jennifer and I were on Steve Cochran's show. And, when Tim passed way too early, I went to the service, and it was like, hey, anybody that wants to speak could come up here.
Mm-hmm.
And I have nothing but great things to say, but I didn't feel like I was, like, worthy of it.
Right.
And then, like, people are getting up, and everybody, you know, and I'm like, well, you know, why did you speak? You know, why did you – I mean, people – you know, I guess that's for anybody that feels like they want to just get some closure.
Right, right.
And Rafer, by the way, is doing awesome on Channel 32.
Yeah, he is. A couple of years ago, you and I had a friend, a guy named Steve Baker, who ran the Chicago Improv Comedy Club, and he died way too soon. And that was the first one that I was at where they said, whoever wants to talk, here's your moment. And like I said, the first few minutes, everyone's like, I don't know, do I want to say anything? But by the end, you saw 30 or 35
right.
people go up.
And I think the difference there is Steve was from Rochester, and they had a big funeral weekend, you know, in New York for him. And this was... in Chicago for like all of his Chicago friends.
Right.
So I think his sister was the only family member that came in. So really it was for
right.
all uh-huh. of the friends. It was for everybody to speak. I think that's the exact same, you know, place and time.
But you know what's great about that is, you know that old parable about a bunch of guys who can't see and they all touch a different part of the elephant and one goes, I know what an elephant's like because he touched the tusk and he explains what it's like. Uh-huh. And they go, no, here's what an elephant's like because he touched the leg and stuff. That's what you're getting when you get that kind of a eulogy. You're getting
right.
30 different versions of the
great.
Same person, and you go, oh, now I put those pieces together, I have a better understanding of it.
Now you make me want to go touch an elephant.
That was my goal.
Yeah, you know, and you just reminded me of another dear friend of ours who we went to his wake together.
Jim Zulovic, yeah.
Who was one of the most talented people that I knew, and really, really funny, and great guy, and... he was a longtime Second City guy, and he was working. He and Odenkirk were working on a disco demolition movie.
I know.
At the time that Jim passed.
Yeah. So I guess the lesson in this is what we said: go touch an elephant. You're thinking about touching an elephant. Go touch an elephant. Don't mess around. All right, we'll take a quick break. We've got some news next, and then more show. It's Bill and Harry in for Wendy on WGN. Thanks, Steve. It's Bill Leff. It's Harry Tynowitz. Harry's filling in for Wendy Snyder. She will return on Tuesday, right after the holiday. Kurt Wagner's here from TVShowPatrol.com. Kurt, hi.
Hi.
Don't say anything. You don't have to. I'm going to ask you a strange question, and I don't want you to blurt out your exact home address, but do you live or sometimes shop near Clark Street, like around...
Oh, all the time.
Like around 5,000...
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So 3 weeks ago, I'm on my way home from here, and I'm driving down Clark, and I see you crossing the street there, and I roll down the window, and I start honking, and I go, Kurt, Kurt, and I'm waving at you, and you gave me a look as if to say, enough of this. I don't have time to be stopped on the street with people yelling my name.
You know, fans are always screaming at me. It just gets so tiring.
I was expecting something along the lines of maybe a wave back or a smile or a talk, but no, all I got was, ugh, another person bothering me as I try to cross the street.
Did Kurt say, don't be Kurt with me?
He didn't say that.
I think I remember that, but I didn't hear my name.
Oh, I was yelling Kurt and honking.
I heard a lot of honking, and it bugs me when I always think on that street, especially in some other, especially downtown, you know, why are you driving? on a busy street, if you're just going to honk at people, you know that you shouldn't be doing that.
Right. That happened to me last night. Everybody's honking at me. You know, I'm going the wrong way down an off ramp. Everybody's like,
so that's probably what I was doing. That's probably was what the what I was thinking in my head.
But I got an eye roll that would be in the, if there was an eye roll Hall of Fame, Chris.
I wish I would have heard you call my name.
I was yelling your name.
Well, maybe I thought you were yelling something.
That's all right. Don't worry.
That's by the way. That's the next thing Apple is coming out with. The eye roll.
I'll have an Apple eye roll. I can't wait. All right. I want to ask you. This is not our sheet of things to talk about, but I'm curious. I just saw there's another musical. Actually, two more that NBC's doing. One of them is Bye Bye Birdie with Jennifer Lopez. And the other one, and I don't know how they're going to swing this.
No, I don't either.
Is Hair.
I know.
What?
They're going to do Hair on NBC. What? Now, for people who don't know, if you see the play Hair, there's a whole lot of naked people.
Yeah, unless you see it in a high school.
The end.
Oh, true.
Well, I've seen it in a high school.
These days, I wouldn't be surprised. The end of the first act, everybody on stage is nude.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. I think the first time I saw that on stage as a full-on nude thing, I was like, what's going on?
Did you not know that was going to happen?
No, because I'd seen it like done in high school.
So so question one, I guess, is how will Danny DeVito do in this version? Question number two is they will do what you just said, right? They'll do a sanitized version.
Oh, they have to. There's no way they cannot do it.
Yeah.
Unless the hair is really long.
Really long.
Safe Harbor?
Extremely
what time is Safe Harbor?
Long. But I have noticed Twitter,
right?
people are tweeting their actor, fans are tweeting their actors.
Of who should play who?
You should do this, yeah. If they know they can sing and stuff like
but
that.
But this is a good ratings getter for any network. I know Jesus Christ Superstar was on a short time ago. It did well. Grease did real well a little while ago. Sound of Music did well. What's behind that? Why are people clamoring to see musicals on TV?
I think they like the live part of it, maybe.
Yeah.
And I think maybe they also like the idea that somebody might crash and burn.
Oh, maybe.
But, I mean, that might just be me.
Maybe.
I was filling in for Wendy right before Jesus Christ Superstar came on, and I said I think that's one of the reasons people watch live television, for there to be a mistake.
Well, because there's not a lot. I mean,
right.
There's Saturday Night Live. And there's The Voice, yeah. Right? Is that one live or is that
Well,
not Voice?
Part of it is. The later part of it is. The auditions aren't, but...
Yeah.
You know, the movie Hair, Treat Williams was awesome.
Yes, yeah. He was.
He was just spectacular in that.
Yeah.
I love that movie.
And Beverly D'Angelo.
Oh,
right?
She was great,
She was really good, too.
I don't remember that movie being full of nudes, either.
Yeah.
I mean, they were strategically placed, right?
John Savage was in it, yeah. There was some naked, people in the movie, yeah. You have some big plans later on today, correct?
Yes.
What's going
Speaking
on today?
Of naked people.
I know it's not. I know it's not saying hello to people who pass you in their car. What could it possibly be?
That show Sense8 that's on Netflix that I have watched for two seasons that it's been on. It was canceled, but fan uproar was so big that they have decided Netflix allowed them to do a movie. To close out the storyline.
This is the Wachowskis, right?
Yeah, right.
They're behind it,
and they're doing a premiere at Music Box tonight.
Oh, that'll be fun.
For that, and then it airs on Netflix June 8th.
Oh, starting very, very June 8th. Nice.
Yes, it'll be on Netflix.
I was thrilled, Kurt, to hear that Brooklyn Nine-Nine was brought back from the dead. Fox cut it, and then it's being picked up, I believe, by NBC.
Yeah.
So, I mean, how rare is that? Can that kind of thing keep happening?
Well, I think it was an NBC Studios show, which is why they were easily able to do it.
Yeah.
And I think... the reason maybe Fox didn't keep it is a lot of the networks now are trying, they have their own in-house studios, and they're trying harder to only use their own shows because then they have all the rights to it.
Yeah.
All the way along. And they don't have to pay fees to have it.
Fox cut a bunch of shows that
were
all doing, including Brooklyn Nine-Nine, doing pretty well in the ratings.
There's currently a campaign to get Lucifer, to have somebody pick up that show Lucifer right now. I think that's happening a lot more in that way. I read something about that somewhere, somebody more knowledgeable than me on the business end.
And over the years, there have been other shows. This isn't a completely new thing. There have been other shows that have been on one network.
Right, like the Mindy.
Taxi, right? Didn't Taxi switch the last year or two? Right?
And I mean, now with the streamers, it's more possible. It's, but it is... maybe a little unusual for a network to you know, from network to network, like of the big four.
10 o'clock news, I think.
Did that switch channels? Yeah. Yeah, that was on one channel and it moved to another. I didn't know that, Eric.
That happens every night.
Letter writing campaign.
It have to be. It would have to be. All right, we'll take a quick break, and then Kurt Wagner's here from TVShowPatrol.com. In a little while, he'll give you the wow moment of the week. Whoa. It's all sponsored by Wow Internet TV and Phone. Stick around, Bill and Harry, in for Wendy on WGN. Bill left. It's Harry Tynowitz. Harry's sitting in for Wendy, who will return on Tuesday. Kurt Wagner's here from TVShowPatrol.com, a great website if you love your television. Kurt, here's a great, there's a bunch of great texts, but I want to get to this one because I think this is something we all take for granted because we know this, but a lot of people probably don't. They ask, how are shows rated? Is it by the number of viewers entirely? And how is that number of viewers determined? And do the cable companies also have that same information? How do they determine their ratings?
The Nielsen ratings are based on viewership, but it just has to do with who...
What, it's a small sample.
Yeah, it's a sampling, and then they extrapolate from there.
Yeah.
And then they look at the demos, you know, like in between the 18 to 49-year-olds. Mm-hmm. Like, I think that's the demo for TV. That's the most important one.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why a lot of times you'll see shows saying we're the number one show, but it's the caveat. It's in, right, you know, the 25 to 40 or whatever. You know, it's like they have different reasons.
But now this is what I've heard, and tell me if you know this is true or not true, that in the last couple of years they've developed this rating system. Everything you just said still is intact, but they have a live rating, which means the time that it's airing, they have a 24-hour, and then they have a one-week rating.
Right. So, live plus 7 days, yeah.
Live plus 7 days. So for people who record those shows, DVR those shows, they get rated a little bit differently if you watch them within a day or within a week, right?
They do. And that any of that helps, and that's why you'll see a lot of times actors, if their show is on the bubble, as they say, you know, like it might get canceled, they'll be tweeting to watch with us live. You know, a lot of times now the shows have the actors live tweet with the show, you know, as a way to get people to watch it live, or at least within those 7 days. I mean, I think the live is always, of course, the better.
Yeah.
Because they're all trying to get, you know, the show gets made because it's got advertising, you know, it stays on the air because of the advertising and everything.
See, when I watch a TV show, when I go to a movie, I want to forget that I'm watching a TV show or that I'm at a movie. And when they say, hey, join the live tweet right now, that reminds me, oh yeah, these are actors. I'm watching a TV show.
Yeah, you don't necessarily.
It kind of throws me off. I was watching Seth Meyers the other night, and Olivia Munn was on, who is, you know, spectacularly talented and newsroom. She was great on that. She's very beautiful. She no longer dates a Green Bay Packer, so I like her even more. But
she dated Aaron. For people who don't know, she was Aaron Rodgers' girlfriend for a couple of years.
Right, and she didn't get renewed. but they showed a clip of Six, and I did not watch any of season one. So to tell us about Six.
That's really good. It's they're not Navy SEALs, but they're you know, like a task force, like a specialized military unit, and. They go into the most dangerous places in the world and try to save people or get people out. The first season, Walton Goggins starred as one of their members who had been kidnapped in Africa. And the other guys went in to find him. And the whole season was about trying to find this guy. This season, which actually starts Monday, is about Olivia Munn plays, I think, a CIA strategist or something like that, or an analyst who works with these guys to help find or to help, you know, to get the intelligence they need to do their job. And it's very good and very sort of gritty and military, you know, like real sort
of
military.
You like it? You're giving it high marks?
Yeah. Right. And it's on, on History Channel. Sorry.
On the History Channel?
I think it's History.
Michelle Wolf was in the news recently. She's a very, very funny comic and writer. She did the Correspondents' Dinner and got some mixed reviews.
She
right?
lambasted, and then she got lambasted.
I know she did. I know.
But I watched that, and I did not think it was as unfair or as bad as people
said. It wasn't.
No, because I don't think she was making fun of a certain person's looks.
She did exactly as she got hired to do.
Right, exactly.
She got hired to make fun of the political climate, and she did.
And she did it. And I feel that because she was mostly attacking conservatives.
Yeah.
And that she's a woman.
Yeah. Came under the gun a little bit.
Yeah.
She has a new show that's premiering on Netflix now. What's the show about? It's The Break, right?
It's The Break with Michelle Wolf. And it's a mix of... She was a former Daily Show person, correspondent. Mm-hmm. So it's a mix of sort of that... sit and deliver kind of stuff, you mm-hmm. know. It's stand up, it's skits. In fact, Netflix just released one of the skits, which I added to my May TV calendar. Oh. When you go to the to that date, May 27th date, it starts Sunday. You can watch the little skit. It's like the full skit where she sort of mocks powerful men.
Yeah.
You know, and movies about powerful men, but she's the woman. Basically, the role was there. She's saying the role was written for a man, but this actress is taking it over. And so she says, and it's really funny.
You know who she reminds me of? And I know people will go, well, obviously, you're comparing her to a woman. And I'm not. I'm comparing her style is very much like Amy Schumer's. She's got a very Amy Schumer feel to me, yeah. which is fine.
How does Amy Schumer feel? just curious.
Fluffy.
Fluffy.
Yeah.
And she has a... She has sort of a Roseanne voice.
Yes.
You know, that's in that, true, yeah. You know, and she's in your face in that way, although they're, I'm sure, on opposite ends of the political
without
spectrum.
Without a doubt. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, I hope the show's good. I'll be watching. It's The Break with Michelle Wolf, and it's on Netflix.
Sundays.
Speaking of Netflix, a friend of mine recommended a show that I had never heard of on Netflix called The Rain, and I just saw ads for it yesterday. Is this something you've seen?
Well, I have not watched it yet, but it's on my, I added it to my... Want to see Q.
Am I getting this right? There's some element within rain. It keeps the, for some reason, this is the post-apocalyptic future and we get a lot of rain, but there's something in the rain that kills people.
Well,
is
that's
right?
What causes the apocalypse.
Oh, is that what it is? Yeah.
And a mother takes her two kids into some, well, the dad does. Whatever. The dad does. Takes his kids into some bunker that he's built that's totally safe and all set up for them to survive. And the kids are 10. Yeah. 11, something like that.
Yeah.
And he leaves in his suit to go find something, and he promises he'll be back in a couple of days. And then flash forward, and it's years later, and they're in their 20s.
Oh.
And they decide, well, I think we waited for Dad long enough. Let's get out of here.
That sounds interesting. So it's a sci-fi feel to it.
But then when they come out, there's, you know, it sort of has that sci-fi thing, that post-apocalyptic thing where they run into other groups. And not everybody's as nice as others might be. And I'm not sure what all happens. It's a Scandinavian. I'm not sure if it's Swedish or Norwegian or Danish, but it's a Scandinavian thing. So,
all right, I'm in.
Kurt, you know, if somebody in Sweden wants to eat Swedish fish, would they just say, like, hey, pass me a fish?
They would laugh at you. That's how it goes down.
Uh-huh.
And make you leave the country.
If somebody said, give me one show that I've never watched, I've never heard of, what would be a good show to turn somebody on? Because all these shows have come to an end, you know, the season's over.
Right.
So what's a good show for someone to, go back and binge for the summer?
A show that's been on, or a show that it could be any show? You know, because I've been watching a lot of actual international shows lately.
Yeah.
And Babylon Berlin is really good. That's on Netflix. It's a German thing.
Yeah.
We've talked about that before.
Yeah.
The show called Occupied is a Norwegian thing that's really good. There's two seasons of that on Netflix.
I do have to say, with the foreign shows, much like foreign films, they don't always play by the rules. Like, a lot of times in America,
but our rules.
Right. Yeah. We have a set up punchline. That's the way the shows go, where you go, well, that's the hero of the show. They're not going to kill that guy off. He's the hero. On foreign shows, they'll do it.
They don't care.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the comedies are really sometimes bizarre.
Yeah.
You know, but those are two shows that I really like. But, gosh, now they put me on the spot. I'm not going to even.
Well, you gave us a couple good ones.
Harry,
those are
you.
Really good.
McHale's Navy. Just watch a few episodes. I think you'll like McHale's Navy. Yeah, it's very good.
Oh, you know what? I finished Lost in Space, the new Lost in Space, the other day.
I watched another episode last night. It's good, isn't it?
I really liked it.
Yeah.
And it does get better. I think the first episode was a little slow, but it really started to get going. A
lot of weird surprises along the way.
Exactly.
Yeah. Lost in Space on Netflix. We just had the kid who played Will Robinson in with us last week.
Was he here
fantastic.
In studio?
Yeah.
Oh, I interviewed him. He's great.
He's great, yeah.
Yeah, well, he's from here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
he also was in
Sense8
as the kid.
Yep.
As one of the adult characters.
He said he's not allowed to see it. He was in it, but because
sure
the subject
can't.
Matter is
oh, there's been other
too much
kids
for him,
like that.
Yeah,
can't
I'm
watch
sure
it.
He can't.
Yep.
But yeah, that's cool. He's nice.
Yeah. That's Kurt Wagner. His website is tvshowpatrol.com. It's great. If you see Kurt anywhere on the street, do not honk at him.
Oh, are we done? Oh, we didn't do the Wow of the Week.
Oh, the Wow moment of the week.
Kurt, okay, what so is the Wow of the Week, is the show that's on Sundance TV. It's a British show called The Split,
mm-hmm.
and it's about a family of divorce lawyers, and the lawyers are women. And apparently in London's the sort of divorce capital of the world,
yes.
and women are the biggest, like there's more women lawyers, divorce lawyers than men divorce lawyers in London.
Yeah.
So it sort of follows that, but it's about this family and things happen. And this woman, this actress who everybody will recognize when they see her, Nicola Walker,
yeah,
is in it. She plays the main character. And I just posted this morning my interview with her. So go there and read it. Not to plug my website, no, TVShowControl.com.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's good. It's really good. And
it's called The Split.
The Split.
All right. Very, very good. Good to see you. Thanks so much. Yeah. It's Kurt Wagner, everybody. A quick break, some news, and then more show. Bill and Harry in for Wendy on WGN. Cam, thanks so much. It's Bill F. and Harry Tyner. It's Harry's filling in for Wendy. She'll be back on Tuesday. Garrett Dillahunt is our guest. Garrett is one of the hardest working and busiest character actors anywhere, who has an incredible knack for showing up on every television show that I like. It's amazing. Garrett, how are you?
Hey, good morning, guys.
What an honor to meet you.
Well, I'm honored that you're honored.
Let me just give a couple of credits your way. Movies like No Country for Old Men, 12 Years a Slave, Winter's Bone, television shows like Deadwood, Raising Hope, Mindy Project, Fear the Walking Dead. That's quite an IMDb page you've put together, sir.
Make me feel old, but yeah.
Now, can I point out something that I think is one of the best full circle stories in the history of show business? When you were on Deadwood, your character killed Wild Bill Hickok, right?
Right.
All right. He was played by Keith Carradine.
Right.
Fast forward a little bit. You're on Raising Hope, working with Martha Plimpton, the daughter of Keith Carradine. What was it like to work with somebody whose father you just killed?
Well, I think we all knew it was pretend, so she wasn't too upset about it. And Keith came on later in the run of the show. I can't remember. It was pretty funny. He came on as some old cowboy dude. It was great.
Well, what do you get recognized for first? Because, you know, Bill's like, Walking Dead and Deadwood. And I mean, I think Burn Notice right away. Is there something you get recognized for more than the other stuff?
Well, I guess probably Raising Hope. Raising Hope quite a bit. Terminator. You can kind of tell, depending on the fan walking up. I get a lot of goth fans from Last House on the Left. You know, I get a lot of, there's still a lot of No Countryers out there, which is surprising. It's kind of surprising how long ago that was.
Yeah.
2007.
Yeah.
But probably Raising Hope, and now I guess Fear. There's a lot of Fear fans
now
coming out of the woodwork.
I don't know how much you can say, but at the end of last week's episode of Fear the Walking Dead, we kind of got the impression that your time of employ there might not be much longer. Can you comment on that, or would you prefer not to?
Well, I certainly can't tell you everything, but I mean, the showrunners did say, you know, they came out very quickly and said, like, well, he's not dead, you know, but clearly I'm hurt pretty bad.
Yes.
So you'll certainly see me again. I guess I can't say how long.
Oh, I hope it's for a long time. Now, Garrett, I would imagine, would you admit that you're one of those actors, and there's a bracket of actors I love like this, who you see in so many things, but then people are hard-pressed to come up with your name. Do you get that a little bit? It's like, I know you from somewhere, but I don't know your name.
I guess I do, because I'm surprised more lately how people say, like, are you Garrett Dillahunt? And it's just such a weird name anyway, that I'm surprised that they got it right, you know. I guess I am. I've always been one of those guys. I've always just wanted to try to disappear. My heroes were always Gary Oldman and guys like that. When I was just a neophyte actor, I just wanted to be different every time. And I don't know. Sometimes I guess that makes it hard for people to figure you out.
Sure.
Or cast you. But I think when you get a little older, it becomes a great thing.
Yeah.
Like, oh, you can do that. Do that, too.
Does that work in reverse? Like, will people come up to you and go, oh, I know you from this, I know you from this, what's your name? You go, oh, hi, I'm Garrett Dillahunt. No, that's not it.
Sure, sometimes. You know, you get people just going through, they want you to list your whole resume. You know, but I usually just say, like, they say, what do I know you from? And I say, well, I mainly do a lot of gay porn. just to see what their face does.
That's where I know you from, of course. I've noticed, Garrett, that for some reason they cast you a lot as lawmen or doctors, right?
Do they do a lot of lawmen? Let's see. I guess there's been a couple lawmen.
Even on Fear the Walking Dead.
Usually people say, oh, you're always the bad guy. And I'm like, it's about half and half.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But doctors recently, right?
That's true.
In the last couple of years, you've played a doctor a lot.
Mindy Project, yep. I was a gynecologist.
Yep.
Yes. Well, I guess I got a good doctor face.
You can think of 8 or 9 things you did, but now I'm going through the IMDb page and I get to one of the greatest cop shows in the history of the world. And I have, you know, full disclosure, I don't remember you on NYPD Blue. What did you do there?
Well, that was I think I had to get my SAG card on that one.
Awesome.
That was way back. I think I played an art dealer or something who was fencing stolen paintings, something like that.
And that was just an episode, Garrett? Was it a one-time thing?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It was just one time. I was fresh out of college. Was excited to get it. It was like Bryce. I played Bryce.
Yeah.
Bryce Cooper Smith or something like that. Some strange name.
Now, walk me through what happened on Deadwood, because you played a character on Deadwood, and then that character was no longer on the show, but then a very short time later, you come back as a different character. They must have loved you over there.
That's the story I'm going with. I played an actual character. I mean, one who actually exists in history, Jack McCall.
Yeah.
Who's only famous because he killed Wild Bill Hickok. And that was, six or seven episodes in season one before he was caught and shipped off for his trial eventually. And I was sad. I was sad that I was going to go because I was having a great time. And I said to David Milch, the creator of the show, I said, so this is it, huh, my last day? This is it. And he was like, yeah, well, come here. And he took me to the Gem Saloon,
yeah,
which we weren't filming in that day. And he said, I got an idea. I want you to play this other guy. And he laid out all these plans for me to be a George Hurst in the coming season,
yeah,
which was season two. And so I had all these meetings. I was going to shave my hairline back. We had this prosthetic nose, and I was going to start growing my beard. And then I was off doing a play because I had a long time until that second season. And he called and said, you know, he's not going to be much more than an off-screen presence in season two. And I was devastated. And he said, but there's this other guy who's right in your wheelhouse. And I don't know why he said that, because the guy was a sexual sadist, you know, and murderer.
It's perfect. So
I ended up playing Wolcott, Hurst's advanced man.
Who was troubled.
Who was troubled.
Yeah.
Yeah, he had a bad relationship with the fairer sex.
Do you agree with me on this, Garrett, that in the history of television, there's never been a grittier, rawer Western than Deadwood? I just love that show start to finish.
I think you're right, and certainly in the history of television, and you're not alone. We have a very loyal, I think very intelligent fan base that is very excited about the possibility of this Deadwood movie coming up.
You think it's going to happen?
I do. I really do. I won't be in it because I'm dead.
Yeah. They couldn't bring you back as a third guy?
I don't know. You know, I think that might be gilding the lily, as they say.
Maybe.
Have you given up on the prosthetic nose thing? I mean, you can't just walk away from that.
Right.
No, but, you know, look, yeah, I could shoot. I mean, I could play someone who's invisible. I don't know.
Right. They had that in the Old West.
You can't let Nicole Kidman just corner the market on those roles.
That's right.
Our guest is Garrett Dillahunt. You know him from so many shows, including Fear the Walking Dead. Don't worry, he's not dead on Fear the Walking Dead. I know he had a bad week last week, but everything's going to be normal. We'll talk more with Garrett next. Stick around. It's WGN. It's Bill and Harry. Harry's sitting in for Wendy. Our guest is Garrett Dillahunt. You know him from shows like Deadwood, Mindy Project, Raising Hope, Fear the Walking Dead. Garrett, let's go back to one of the roles. This one always fascinates me. On Book of Daniel, you played, Jesus, didn't you?
That's right.
Yeah.
That's a good guy.
So, yeah. He's a good guy. Most people would say, yeah, that's your good guy right there. So, what was the mindset of playing Jesus?
Well, that was a weird one. I don't know. I had to make sure I wasn't an ass on set. That's
yeah,
for sure. Right. You know, I had a 3-day turnaround. It was written in my contract.
Yeah.
No, I didn't.
I got the 3-day turnaround. I love that. I thought that was brilliant.
Yeah.
He was just here.
I tell you, the worst part about that job was I had a real beard for the pilot, but then we didn't shoot the series till quite a while later, and then I lost the beard, and then I had to glue a beard on every day.
Since you played that, do you look at other people since you did that, do you look at other people playing Jesus and say, "Oh no, that's all wrong"?
No, I don't. I let him have it. I'm like, you can take it. Too good for me.
Right. Do you prefer comedy or drama? I know you keep going back and forth. Which is better for you?
It's kind of the going back and forth part is the better for me. I just really like that change, and I like not being stuck in one. I think doing Raising Hope, I really had to jump through a lot of hoops. Because it had been a long time since I'd done any comedy. I'd just done a lot of really horrible things. And I think I'd just come off a particularly brutal job. And I said to my folks, I was like, let's do some comedy again. It's been a while.
Yeah.
And it's funny how quick they forget.
Do they still make you audition? Or are you a known enough quantity now where they just go, get me Garrett. He's the guy I want.
Well, most of the time I'll at least rate a meeting instead of an audition, which aren't necessarily easier, you know.
Yeah.
But it's nice not to have to learn all those lines, you know, just for the audition. But there'll still be plenty of times I'll audition. I'm happy to, you know. Sometimes you'd be surprised who still auditions for things, you know, and we'll do it.
Who would be the most shocking that we would be surprised by?
I don't know. I feel like I've read stories of, like, you know, De Niro coming in to read for somebody.
Wow.
Just, you know, and it's not like a typical audition setup. It's just like, let's get together and let's, you know, I'll read through this, you know. And that's, I feel like actors worth their salt. They don't really pitch a big fit about that.
Right. When you were auditioning more, were you up against the same guys? Was there a type that you were against all the time that you'd see at every audition, or was it always a different story for you?
That's a good question. You know, I feel like there certainly were people I would see, you know, back in my theater days, you know,
mm-hmm.
back in my starting out days is really what I meant to say there. But I guess not so much anymore.
No.
Maybe just don't hear about it. It's always probably the same five guys, right?
Yeah.
Garrett, I'm a big Gene Hackman fan, and he talks about how the other actors who sit at his table, and sometimes when he gets handed a script, he can just tell, like, who are the other actors that were handed the script first and said no. Like, do you have people in your world that you bump into and you say, hey, did you get asked to read for this? Who are some of the people that sit at your table?
Gosh, I wonder. I'm not really sure, but I feel like I wouldn't be surprised if I heard them. I'd be like, oh, that makes sense.
Yeah.
I can see that.
Yeah.
I love Gene Hackman. I miss him.
Boy, isn't it sad that he's writing books now. He's not making movies. That's tragic.
He made so many great movies.
Yeah.
You know, he never shot anything on digital.
In his whole career.
Yeah, he was always like that. That's almost, you can tell, his era.
Yeah, film only.
Everything he's ever done was on film.
How about that? On Mindy Project, you play Jody. Now, we've had Fortune Feimster on, who plays your sister. She's coming up, actually, because she does stand-up comedy here in town, and we always have her on. I thought that family dynamic of you and her being brother and sister was hysterical. What'd you think of it?
Oh, yeah. Fortune's like, she's like a giant heart.
Yeah.
Walking around on two legs, you know, and she's just it was that was an intimidating show for me to be on.
Why?
You know, because everyone's like an actual comedian.
Yeah.
You know, they're so good at improvisation, and you know, Ike Barinholtz and Mindy herself and Ed Weeks. Everyone was just so quick and so facile, and most of the time I would, you know, I pretty much stuck to what was written for me. And any advice they would give me, but boy, that was a lot of fun.
You held your own, Garrett. Trust me when I tell you, you blended in very, very nicely with everybody.
Well, that's good to hear. Thank you.
I really did. What an honor to meet you. I'm not kidding when I say this. Every time you're on a show that stops production, like Mindy Project, I say to myself, I hope you get something quick, and I turn the channel, and there you are again, and I'm always thrilled.
I'm a bit of a workaholic, you know, so Yeah, I'm glad it's not. I'm not making you sick of me.
No,
yeah,
not in any way. Keep up the great work.
Yeah, me too. Oh, you said workaholic.
Workaholic, Harry. Yeah. Workaholic.
It's different.
Garrett, keep up the great work. And if you ever have anything you want to plug, we're here for you.
Nice meeting you, fellas.
Thank you so much. That's
Thanks, Garrett
Dillahunt. Watch him on Fear the Walking Dead. We'll take a quick break and then close things off. It's Bill and Harry on WGN.